This is 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris himself is currently serving a sentence in County Jail 8 up in San Francisco for having served bagels, soup, and I'm told a lovely garden salad to homeless and hungry people in Civic Center Plaza. And for this, he's got 2 months in jail. I caught up with Bathrobes Pierre himself yesterday from a phone call from jail. I'll do a little delegation there. Because I, you know, your bathrobe is a pretty big bathrobe to fill.
Yeah, it is. And a pretty big guy with a pretty undersized bathrobe. But you can do it, DJ.
No, I can't do it. I can only do everything I was doing before, and a lot more, but not that much more. I can't do everything you did.
I believe it. How about the,
Sure, if I stopped doing everything I did, I could do everything you do.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Then Robert talked about the upcoming boycott for cities who have laws which are unduly harsh to homeless people, such as sleeping laws and sitting laws.
It was interesting that somebody else proposing a boycott California proposal independently of him. And it was somebody like Keith McHenry, who is maybe Keith picked it up from Bob or something. I think I heard it from Keith. Maybe it was somebody else. The thing to do with the Santa Cruz Homeless Alliance, they will not answer you if you just say, call me back. They never do. Maybe they will answer you. They rarely answer me. They do occasionally. But if you say, call me back with a fax number and I'll send you a bunch of stuff, they may respond.
Hello, Bathrobes Pierre.
Hey, Becker Becky.
So I hear that you've got your diet plate there. Could you share with us what that's all about?
Well, I'd love to share the whole damn plate with you, I'll tell you. It's some rather interesting-looking cabbage or lettuce, a few taco shells, several packets of white sugar, and then an enclosed plate which has what looks like beans, possibly spinach or greens, and some other indecipherable. It looks like, should we say, someone made a quick trip to one of the other areas of the institution to deposit that particular
No, not that bad.
Yeah. But I'm sure that's...
And with an appetizing odor, too?
It's it's simply designed to encourage you to maintain a tight ship. Actually, you tend to gain weight here. The robe has been getting bigger.
Uh-oh.
In order to stop that, I've been hitting the exercise bike. Now, for all you jailbirds out there, or potential jailbirds, there's nothing more important than keeping slim and trim in the big house. So my next Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail will include a special Jane Fonda-like tape designed to help you folks at home train for your jailhouse experience.
Kind of going to become the Richard Simmons of the big house?
Indeed. I will indeed be the Richard Simmons of the jailhouse. But that's another matter. The meal is the high point of the day, one of them. And I'm not terribly high looking at it at the moment, so that's just how it is.
So, Robert, could you tell us about what sort of procedures that you had to go through to see a visitor today? And
yeah, well, the visiting situation here is very limited. You get about you get a 20-minute visit on Saturday and or Sunday. You might get a couple of 20-minute visits if people want to sign up more than once. People have to come in at 8 in the morning and sign up here in County Jail 8, Pod F, for all you potential visitors. And it's only on Saturday and Sundays and holidays. That'll be July 4th, when there is also a visiting period, similar to Saturdays. But Saturdays, it's, 12 to 1:30, and Sundays, it's, today it was 9 to 11. And you are then, you suddenly hear your voice being blasted at you, or your name blasted at you, from the central pod HQ. Mr. Khan, Mr. Khan, the report to Dana Higgins, sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And you then, you go and you walk into a little room adjoining the cell area. and that room is the visitor's area, which is sort of a draped, has a window with one-way glass, covered with a couple of sheets. And that will become, the reasons for those sheets will become obvious that toward the end of each of the interview sessions, I should say, each of the visiting sessions. You are allowed 20 minutes. You are seated in a chair. And the prisoners are beside you, usually up to six of them, each of them receiving their visitors. And then there's a space about 2 or 3 feet, and then there's another set of chairs on which the visitors sit. And then between you is this beefy guard in green with a walkie-talkie, and mine had a goatee, I think, and a little shaved-off beard, something you might see in a sort of a trendy coffee house guy from the early 60s. And he, guards differ in their interpretation of the rules. Yesterday when I had visitors, the guard was an Asian American guy who was pretty laid back and he didn't mind if I brought in writing material and took notes and so forth. This guy was, you know, rigid. He would not allow me to take anything into the room. He said, take that back to your bunk. You know, you're missing your visiting time, blah, 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 blah. So I said, okay, I took it back to my bunk and came back again. And there was my visitor, who was a guy that I had kind of drummed up out of the San Francisco population. I've lived in San Francisco in the past, and he was sort of a friend from older times. Hearing I was in jail, he trooped on down to kind of shoot the shit with me, as we would say. We did that for about 20 minutes, and occasionally the guard would say, hands on the table where I can see them, to me. And, of course, I would refrain from flipping him the bird, since that's the basis for a minor rule infraction, maybe a major rule infraction, which is getting you 60 more days. And,
60 more days?
Potentially, yeah.
For a
major rule infraction. I don't think that's the minor. Three minors, however, equal a major. It's like three strikes and you're out inside the can, although the threshold of criminality is much, much lower if you're in here. Like if you have four oranges stored away, that's the basis for a minor infraction. If you have more than three books, that's the basis for a minor rule infraction. If you don't wear the proper clothing, if you roll up your pants, that's the basis. I mean, they have, you know, they've got them coming and going. Now, they're pretty loose. I haven't been
reading. So, I mean, do you have to read, like, you know, this Encyclopedia Britannica of what the rules are when you come in?
There are about 35 or 40 rules, and they're all in pretty small print. I wouldn't call it the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it's certainly at least as long as, just 2 or 3 pages of rules. And they're, as I said, they're single spaced and they're small.
Mm-hmm.
You did get an orientation session, and I have found the guards generally been pretty loose. I mean, they'll tell you about it. It's more the basis for trying to get you to follow the rules rather than get you written up. So that's I will give them that generally. But of course, it's rather oppressive and uncomfortable. The worst of it all, as I've mentioned to you in the past, is it puts you in a mindset where you become afraid of people in uniform instead of treating them as people or, you know, at least having the, you know, having the courage to simply exist around them as you normally do. You adopt a strange style, which is kind of a furtive one. You know, you're worried about what they see you, et cetera, and what's happening next. Something you really have to fight, I think, because you dehumanize yourself and you dehumanize them by allowing this to go on. Of course, the risk you take is you'll get penalized or, you know, more time added at worst. Brutalized, at worst, actually. More time added as a lesser punishment. But none of that's happened yet, so it's all speculative. But it is definitely a psychological factor when you're in jail. At least even in this jail, which is considered, as I mentioned in past tapes, the glamour slammer.
Oh, you are in the glamour slammer.
I'm in the glamour slammer, yes. We don't have any stars here except perhaps for me, your very own bathroom spear, who's, prisoners aren't terribly impressed. They aren't quite as unimpressed, let's say, as the prisoners in the DiCenzo cartoon.
Has that been passed around?
Which I have not passed around, no. I received it from three different sources, however. I got Wilhelmina sent me a copy of it. I guess you sent me a copy of it, and I got a copy from Beauvais, maybe even from four different sources. So everybody, I'm all the rage in the DiCenzo. I hope somebody responds to that cartoon. I'm not sure quite what the proper response would be. I certainly would suggest burning down the Metro offices. That would be the wrong approach.
I gather you didn't really care for the cartoon much.
Well, I dictated a long letter on this to a local Santa Cruz reporter, hoping to get it typed up and sent to the Metro, but as of yet,
so hard.
I hear it's been mislaid.
It's so hard to get good help these days.
Lost in the files, so to speak.
Well, maybe you could share with us a little bit of the contents of what that might have been.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I just, I went through the history of my case, and I kind of sarcastically described the DeCenzo cartoon as, what did I say? Is it something like, actually, I have a copy of it right here, as fate would have it. Or do I? Somewhere around.
Starting to collect a pile of papers, are you?
I'm thumbing through my voluminous files here. I'm on page 20 of my journal / notes. Thanks for the insightful cartoon featuring me shuddering behind bars as Beefy Con sized me up for rape. Apparently, Metro Santa Cruz DeCenzo has done his own investigation and finds Amnesty International's prisoner of conscience status is undeserved. And of course, the footnote to that is, I've told you, the prisoner of conscience status is still sort of edge of prisoner of conscience status, sort of like Edge of Night, you know, the daytime serial. These are the stories of the starship Robert, his mission to continue to eat prison food without throwing up. Cenzo invites the audience to guffaw at the violent and dangerous conditions in jail and sneer at the principles for which some of us are in here. With its usual depth and clarity in eliminating controversial issues, Metro Santa Cruz DeCenzo has reduced the jail for soup battle of the war against the homeless to a caricature of a cowering crank in a jail cell. That's how I begin this very important letter that has apparently been discarded with the late local debris in Santa Cruz, so we'll hope that that reappears for you.
Okay, well, see if we can reappear it. Maybe the full version
Version. Well, I'll read you a little more. How's that?
Well, certainly our free radio.
The free radio has to be able to get the kind of an advanced scoop on that.
Well, I think they're more deserving than the Metro readers.
Count on Metro Santa Cruz to dredge up the usual rank stereotypes on an issue it is otherwise utterly ignored. The abusive use of laws and injunctions to hustle the homeless out of sight. It must be a kick for Metro yuppie puppies to have their morning cappuccino at the Au Courant Coffee for Cops Cafe across the street from the Metro offices while 500 to 1,500 Santa Cruz homeless play hideout or get out with local police and politicians. Just around the corner from the Metro and its beloved Java House, no homeless activists, thanks. Cafe, Mayor's Rotkin and Mayor Rutkin and Assistant City Attorney Constitution Clipper Candiotti, or Candiotti as he's been named by some, have stepped up their crash course against the homeless with a May 31st injunction, unwilling to allow the elementary human right to sleep at night for fear of antagonizing merchants and bigots. The Kennedy Yokoyama majority on City Council has made one count of sleeping after 11 p.m., one act of preparing, cooking, or storing food, or one act of having a sign bigger than 14 inches, contempt of court punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Consequently, demonstrators at City Hall, the City Hall Sleepers Vigil, have no signs for fear of being either arrested under the injunction's contempt proceedings, or else having signs that are negligible in that they're so small they can't be seen from the street. Homeless activists Andrea Roth, Michael Cessna, and Pat Ring have already been jailed under... have been jailed and the stakes have been raised. On 619, a vindictive and incompetent bailiff, Deputy Thurber, raised the stakes still further. Roth and Ring were assaulted by a half dozen sheriff's deputies outside courtroom 8 as their defense attorneys inside moved to range in blanket snatching by SCBD blue shirts. Thurber, ever eager to humiliate and repress activists in his courtroom, sparked the shameful incident where Ring was callously pepper sprayed, then overcharged with more than 6 counts, including 3 contempt of court charges. Thurber's martinet and antics against insufficiently submissive citizens is legendary. Abuse of this contempt of court law, which was used against Ring, is familiar to me. I am serving a 2-month jail sentence for giving out soup and bagels to the homeless in San Francisco in October 1993. Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry was arrested yesterday a block away from my cell. Yesterday, of course, was a week ago now. He was arrested on Tuesday, June 20th, for serving oatmeal under that same handy-dandy contempt law, the first arrest under Mayor Willie Brown's of Food Not Bombs Act was for food crime since the bad old Jordan days. The day I entered jail, another trial began in Whittier, California, for serving Food Not Bombs food. Actually, that trial has been postponed because of an attorney conflict. It may start again next week, actually tomorrow. Another jury trial is slated to begin in a week. That is actually both these Whittier activists will begin their trial by court, their endurance trial, their trial by jury, actually, tomorrow. That is in Whittier. I wish my case was just a rare fluke, a lamentable leftover from a darker era, but for poor and homeless people, this is the darkness, not the dawn. Metro Santa Cruz might ask for a guest editorial, too, from Bookshop Santa Cruz owner and former mayor Neil Coonerty.
Yeah, right.
Who authored Santa Cruz's famous Sit 10 Feet from a Shop, Go to Jail law back in 1994. Coonerty's triumph is an ex parte letter to Judge Robert Barkley, my judge, at the June 7th sentence modification hearing, denouncing me and urging a maximum sentence. It's now the cause of my latest court challenge, urging Barkley to be disqualified. Judges aren't supposed to read such ex parte, which means communications that were just addressed privately to the judge. Perhaps Coonerty's customers should be apprised of the latest liberal accomplishment of their favorite bookseller. Barkley is the Hicksville hatchet man called in to pinch hit for nervous judges in San Francisco who wanted me jailed but preferred not to face local voters at the polls afterwards. This is an election year in San Francisco. He reputedly retired, did Barkley, after his final assignment in jailing me. A job well done, no doubt.
He's retired?
Yeah, that's what I heard from
Barkley?
Bedrock Beauvais, yeah.
Wow.
Now you Santa Cruz liberals should also know that I publicly requested a letter of support from our own sofa bed soft life socialist Mayor Mike Rotkin, who declined, too busy removing unwanted sleeping band protesters from his city hall grounds, or attempting to do so. I guess he's busy removing their signs and displays and trying to get the court to remove the people. And I guess he gets the police to do that every so often.
He had a rationale for why he didn't write a letter.
Yes, his rationale was that it would be inappropriate to tell another city what to do. And he would be offended if somebody wrote him a letter telling him what to do. He felt it was a separate jurisdiction. Actually, it's pretty thin. He wasn't really telling the city what to do. He was would be recommending a sentence for me.
Is this the same city council that was making statements about Nicaragua?
Yes, Nicaragua, immigration.
So he can tell the...
He doesn't mind telling those people what to do.
Uh-huh.
And he certainly could have done so as an individual rather than as the mayor.
Uh-huh.
But he chose not to.
But if it's another city, then it's off limits as
right.
a mayor. But if you're a former mayor, I guess it's okay, as in the case of Neil Coonerty, who's now private citizen.
But the current mayor
should
set him free, I guess. The injunction he voted for includes a no food section. That's what the injunction that Rotkin voted for, which may shortly be turned against the Feed the People organization. Sean Alimi, Feed the People cook, faces multiple sleep crime charges already for his part in the City Hall sleepers protest. When the Metro news managers take a break from their croissants and cappuccinos at the Java House, let them ask Java House owner Kevin Foer whether he still declines to admit the couple and their 3-year-old son that he barred at Christmas for buying a cup of coffee for a homeless undesirable on the sidewalk. Does he still reject mediation, non-discrimination guidelines, and an appeals procedure? Will he keep his word publicly given and taped on June 13th that Wonton Dave Jacobs, another homeless activist driven from town by sleep crime warrants, will be readmitted without further harassment to the hip hangout? He did give that commitment, kick him out Kevin, as I call him, of the Java House. And that was witnessed by, I believe, you and others.
Well, actually, I had... grown disgusted at that point and wandered off at that point.
Oh, well,
yeah,
we have
so,
a tape somewhere.
Yes.
After a few cups, perhaps Nettleson News, or N-U-Z, of the Metro might toddle her trendy tush towards Rutkin's war zone at City Hall to document the 6 a.m. extortion expeditions of Sergeant Clearamount Clark. On my last weekend in Santa Cruz at the vigil, Clark upheld Mayor Rutkin's I am the law stance, actually imitated it in his puppy fashion, by ticketing former River Street refugee Larry Vail for covering up with bedding when he had none, and ignoring me and my baby blue blanket, because to have arrested me might have meant media attention.
That's right. That guy got ticketed for bedding, and he didn't have any bedding?
Right. No, not a one. He had some newspapers that were covering him. That is not bedding. And actually, they weren't even covering him. They were underneath him. Pick on the week. Duck into the Java House for another batch of brew before drawing some more jailhouse rape fantasies. It's more fun to sneer than to make things clear. That was my endless article, which you lost, Beggar Bagger Becky.
Gee.
Hopefully now you have it again the second time and can go for the gusto.
Well, I'm glad that the free radio audience got the scoop. And this is 96.3 FM.
FM. Listen, I got to eat, or else they'll take away this delicious food, and I'll be shit out of luck, or maybe I'll be out of luck with the shit or something.
Well, thank you for that little pre-lunch
little preview of what I'm going to be getting into here. Yeah, if you remember, pick up my mail at Tom's.
One. Hi, we're talking with Heather Hansen. Hi, Heather.
Hello, Becky.
And you're calling from Ventura.
I'm calling from Ventura, California.
And you have a pretty sad story about what happened to you in Dominican Hospital. Could you tell the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience something about that?
Yes, Becky. I lived in Santa Cruz for 14 months in 1993 and 94. And during that time, I was pregnant up there from a relationship that I had, and had a second child up there. I'm a mother already, a single mother, and had a baby girl at a public hospital in Santa Cruz. It's Dominican Hospital in Santa Cruz.
The only one there is.
Yeah. I had actually come to Santa Cruz trying to get some distance on a legal battle in New York State, which was a custody battle with my son, who was born in 1990, and that I had been fighting for custody for more than 3 years, fighting the Department of Social Services, the county child welfare system, to get my son and...
And what county was that in?
This was in Cattaraugus County, New York, below Buffalo, in the southwest portion of New York State. And,
so tell us what happened when you came to Dominican Hospital here in Santa Cruz.
I knew very little about the hospital. I'd never been there before, and I came in an emergency kind of state where the baby that I was planning on having came 6 weeks earlier than I anticipated,
mm-hmm.
and I just had to make do with whatever doctors would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And
had you been planning a home birth or something like that?
Yes, I've been planning to use midwives and do a home birth, and the amount of time I had to prepare that had run out, where suddenly I was going into labor and
mm-hmm.
I had to just do whatever I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my father drive me up to Dominican Hospital, and within minutes after arriving at the hospital, I gave birth to a baby girl. And this was on a Saturday, December 3rd, 1993. Had the baby there where I had access to it for two full days after the first day, and then half of the fourth day that I was there, where halfway through the fourth day, the day I was going to be released and go home, a social worker from the Child Welfare Department of Santa Cruz County came accompanied by a deputy sheriff and told me that they were taking the baby away, and they used the term protective custody, where they were going to essentially do the same thing they'd done with my son, which was to separate me from the child and create a divide, and that I would be at their mercy from that point on. And
what reason did they give?
They really had nothing that was very strong.
Did they say that you had abused your previous child,
there was nothing that they said that really made sense to me. It was not something I was really able to understand. I definitely argued their points and did my best to defend my position.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what they said is they claimed that I had not been responsible about getting proper medical care when I was pregnant, and my dad was in the room, and I was able to have him assure them that I'd been dealing with midwives, and I had been very diligent to work with them,
mm-hmm.
With alternative medicine to do it that way, and I had not done it through a hospital program.
Who is the social?
They threw different accusations at me, which I, one after another, pointed out that it wasn't true.
Uh-huh.
However, of no avail. They went ahead with this, where I was forced to leave the hospital without the baby I had just had.
Oh my God! How horrible!
That the medical staff in the maternity ward were in on it too. They were all acting against me, and I was medically unstable at the time, where I was not able to fight any harder than I could or be in full bodily strength.
So you were like 48 hours postpartum, right?
Right, right. I was very weak.
And the baby had been premature, too.
Candy away from a baby.
For our listeners who have not given birth, it's more taxing on a woman's body to give birth if the child is premature than if it's full term, even if it's smaller. Some people think that, you know, that the premature babies are smaller.
Well, it wasn't actually a premature baby. It was a thing of that. The time that the pregnancy had began was back farther into the earlier months than I had known, where I had been at an earlier point than I had known.
So that's what they determined.
So the whole thing was thrown off.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't a premature birth.
It was a full-term baby.
Uh-huh.
Someone who gave me the due date had given me a wrong due date.
Mm-hmm.
So
mark those calendars well, girls.
Yeah. The person who gave me the due date was not a professional. It was at a crisis pregnancy center.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe was part of it, is they were not someone with medical experience.
We're not going to have a lot of time to go into the follow-up. First off, I wanted to know, who was the name of the social worker that came and...
Her name was Ethel Lewis. She was an older black woman. The name of the deputy sheriff was Don Kester.
And then you went before a judge at some point later on?
Yeah.
Who was that?
72 hours after being released from the hospital, I went before a judge. And the judge validated
Which judge
this
was that?
Conquering action that they had taken, essentially legalizing what they had done through a court procedure, where I, at the time, was absolutely sure that the judge would throw it out of court.
Uh-huh.
The whole thing was so bizarre,
right.
And instead the judge validated the whole thing and formalized it.
Uh-huh. And which judge was that?
That was a female judge in juvenile court named Charlotte Cloud.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, these are all names that are very familiar to me and might be familiar to some of our listeners out there. Heather, I'm looking forward to doing a videotape interview with you in the near future. And so any of our radio listeners who also have access to television sets, please turn into Channel 71 and my show Club Cruise, which is on Tuesday nights 7 to 7:30. And then we'll probably, we're looking forward to seeing the long-awaited For Kids' Sake documentary, which is about abuses in the family law system right here in Santa Cruz County. Heather, thank you for that update, and we'll be wanting to hear more from you.
Well, I feel my story's been a little cut off because this is now 2.5 years ago that this all occurred, and since the time that the child was taken from the hospital, I've seen it one time for 1 hour several months later, and I've never seen it again. So it's very much of an ongoing saga, and the whole thing has essentially gone from bad to worse.
And this is 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. And that was Jim Morrison with Hello, I Love You. I thought I'd just really surprise everybody and play some actual music here on Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides in from jail. And so listen in. All right, now, I know that all of you are eager to send all your cards and letters off to see Robert Morse, all those love letters, and for you, Neil Coonerty, that hate mail. So I'm sure you want to do it accurate, so send it to Robert Morse Con, prisoner number 147-2209, and he's at CJ8-FPOD, F as in Frank, -41B at 425 7th Street, San Francisco, California, 94103. And I'll be announcing that later in the show. Do send him some mail. He loves to hear from all of his supporters and his critics. And send it away. I also wanted to give the viewers an update on that rumor we heard earlier that the Santa Cruz City Council was considering dropping the live videotaping on Channel 72 of City Council meetings every other Tuesday night. And I ran into Mayor Mike, and he assured me that there was no such plan in order, and that the City Council meetings would continue to be broadcast live on Channel 72. So that's some good news from our mayor on high. This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And what you're going to hear next is some conversations that Robert and I had from County Jail 8 about handheld signs at City Hall.
I think maybe you should hold up a 15-inch sign.
Right. Have somebody come along with a ruler.
15-inch sign that says, kindness shouldn't be illegal.
Right. Or
right? Some really innocuous thing, you know?
Stop stupid, Dave, before it stops you.
Have a nice day, you know?
Yeah.
15 inches, you know? Breaking the 14-inch handheld sign law.
That's has Stevens confirmed that is actually the law, that they have to be handheld and lower than less than 14 inches?
Stevens?
Yeah. Do we know that's actually the case, or is that the police interpretation?
Hey, where did we get that from? No, that's from the ordinance itself.
I've never heard that ever being enforced anywhere. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's strange.
Well, it's bad work by Condotti and Barisoni, where they have concocted an ordinance that doesn't say it's specifically about handbills posted on telephone poles and utility poles.
Oh, I see. They were using a telephone utility pole.
But it doesn't say that. Because it doesn't specifically say those are the signs, and it doesn't say anything at all about handheld signs. And basically, a handheld sign can be any size you want.
Uh-huh.
Legally, because, you know, I mean, if you're owning, it's like property, something you own.
Right.
Huh?
So handheld signs can be larger than 14 inches, but nobody wants to hold them up all the time? Is that the problem?
You could buy a piece of cardboard that had no writing on it.
No, I mean at City Hall. Yeah. There's nothing against holding up a handheld sign 6 feet by 6 feet if you want.
I don't believe so.
No, does Stevens say so?
Stevens said that we had to follow all of the ordinances, and the ordinance says we can't have a sign larger than 14 inches.
Handheld sign?
It does not specifically say handheld or not handheld or posted or anything. So, presumably, it applies to all signs.
Oh, I see. Well, that's bullshit. We know it does.
Well, exactly. The ordinance is badly written. And they're using this badly written ordinance to, what happened with Patrick, you know, arrested for signs protruding. And they never did pick up Sunshine.
Yeah, they gotta find her. She's at large somewhere. Rumor has it that she shows up every day at dawn.
Oh, she's at large?
Yeah.
Is there a warrant out for her?
Well, she's been seen up here. She's been seen in Mendocino. She's even been seen in the far north.
Wow. Legend.
I can tell you, though, it's a problem. I'm a bit tired. You know, I've been playing chess for the last 2 hours and then watching a stupid movie called Heat.
Heat?
Heat.
Or heat. Eat. E-A-T?
No, heat.
Oh, as in hot.
Yes. I have no idea what's been happening the last 5 days, having been isolated from newspapers and most news.
Now, you'll be getting papers soon, I believe.
We'll see. I have no idea if there was. There is. The boxes I ordered from Gamescape have probably been sent back.
Do other people get papers in there?
No, nobody has a subscription to a paper.
How many people are in with you?
90
people? There are 90 people in there, and not one of them has a subscription to a paper?
Correct. This is a poverty-ridden area. People come in and out of this pod. Although, some have been here for 4 months, but some people are so poor they don't have any money to call out, they don't have any commissary. Some people are poor.
Huh.
In fact, most people who are in jail are poor, is generally the rule. Otherwise, where would they be in jail?
So what are the typical charges that they're in for?
I don't know about typical.
Or what are the range of charges?
There's a lot of drug cases. One guy talked to me about an aggravated assault. One guy, heroin use, selling pot. A lot of parole violations. This petition I found today from San Francisco Bay View, black newspaper, asks that it points out that California does more parole violating per year than all the 49 states combined. At least that's the allegation that's made. And there's a petition to try to stop that.
Were they suggesting that? That the rules were so stringent for people on parole that they can't help but violate the rules somehow?
They were suggesting that there's abusive use of parole to violate people. And you'll be actually getting a verbatim copy of much of the petition to look at, which I maybe begin circulating after conferring with a few people I've kind of been playing chess and watching silly movies instead of engaging in my important work of getting into more trouble with the prison authorities so I could stay here longer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was wondering how long it would take for you to get around to that.
Yeah. So, we're on tape now, are we?
Yes, we are.
It's a mellow scene here. Everybody's looks pretty orange. It's dark orange in the pants and usually light orange in the shirts. Everybody looks like a bunch of fruits and vegetables here. Some places they look like bananas, some places like oranges, and some places like plums. Well, it's orange land here.
There's some significance to these colors?
The orange is the, apparently the jumpsuit, the fashion-setting favorite of prison authorities here. As you know, in Santa Cruz, if you're a woman, you wear plum-colored clothing. And I hear in some places you wear yellow-colored clothing. This is all very exciting, and I hope that people profit by this information to adopt the prison garb on the streets.
I hope that they didn't have... so that people start wearing prison garb on the streets so that they can't tell the escaped prisoners anymore.
Exactly. We're planning a massive breakout here as soon as we can figure out how to get past the 17 doors between ourselves and freedom.
17 doors?
Well, actually, that's an exaggeration. I'd say 2 or 3 doors, 4 or 5 locked doors, a couple of elevators, number of armed guards, some unarmed guards.
Robert, I've heard stories from prisons where whenever you have to go from one place to another or have anything, that there are endless searches. Are you finding that to be true there?
Well, I did have my buns displayed for all to see this morning, but that was the first time that happened since I arrived. It happened when I arrived, and it happened this morning when a woman from Food Not Bombs came to see me and kind of brought me word of the outside. It was my visitor for this morning. Her name was Carly. She was a faithful and loyal, actually a new Food Not Bombs person. And we sat and kind of made idle chit-chat for about 20 minutes. I didn't quite know what to say to her. I'd never met her before, but
this was your first visitor.
My first and only visitor. Nobody else showed up. All you loyal Santa Cruzans down there, hop on your bikes and head north. Visiting hours are 12 to 1:30 on Saturdays, and 9 to 11 on Sundays, but show up at 8 so you can sign up.
Oh, you have to, like, drive. Okay, everybody, set your alarm clocks on.
Set your alarm clocks and, you know, grab the.
Saturday and Sunday. Get up at 6 a.m. on a weekend and drive to San Francisco.
Walking is the best way to do it. Robert Flory always recommends eliminating the vehicular side from the equation.
Okay, so hitchhike to San Francisco.
Right, hitchhike to the flowers.
Sign up at 8 o'clock. Do they have to get their buns searched, too?
No, your buns aren't searched. I don't even know if you're searched. I didn't hear from Carly whether you were searched or not. But I was searched when I left. I had to take off all my clothes, lift my balls, show my buns, and cough.
Well, did you actually get in the same room with her?
We were in the same room, and we were separated by a deputy who kind of sat there looking bored while...
It was different from Santa Cruz County Jail, where there's a very thick plexiglass window.
That's right. There's no phone plexiglass situation.
And you talk on a telephone?
You actually get to meet the people by...
From Santa Cruz County Jail, where... There's a very thick plexiglass window when...
That's right. There's no phone plexiglass situation.
And you talk on a telephone?
You actually get to meet the people by sitting across from them. Of course, you can't fondle them, you know.
No fondling.
No touching.
Isn't that a violation of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution?
I would certainly regard it as such. I've demanded conjugal rights, even if I don't believe in conjugations particularly, or at least not in marital conjugations, but, my pleas have gone into the same trash basket as have the requests for the law library. I'm joking about the conjugal stuff. The law library requests are being ignored. In fact, I'm told by the guard that they've never taken anyone to the law library from this pod. In fact, they have offered to transfer me to San Bruno or some other pit of hell in order to use the law library.
Thank you.
But I've said, nah, I'll wait on that. I've asked Beauvais if he'll look into it.
So that's it, that you either go to one of their... And I guess the prison systems are rated, and there's a great different rating in levels of quality of life or lack of quality of life, depending on which prison you're in, with probably Pelican Bay being like the worst prison in the state of California.
Pelican Bay is rumored to be not a hot place. I actually have not met anybody here. I've met people from San Quentin, but not from Pelican Bay yet. Perhaps we can interview someone if that ever happens, although I tend to get lost here. You'll have to keep reminding me to interview people. You know, it's a very passive environment. That's one of the problems. One of the great exercises I use is to try to continue to treat both guards and prisoners as ordinary human beings, which really requires mustering a lot of internal fortitude because... Prisons are designed to intimidate you to some extent, and resisting that intimidation is a difficult matter. It's easier to succumb to it, and I guess I do 80% of the time, but I'm working on the other 20% as well. Little things like walking to the bathroom without asking permission become a major struggle. You have to struggle within yourself to do it and risk somebody saying, "What are you doing? Come on, get back in line," and that sort of thing. And then you have to find some way of dealing with that without getting upset or angry, and maintaining equanimity, and it all makes for a great Gandhian and self-training camp if you want to get into that. But fortunately, you don't have anybody who's helping you, so you have to kind of make it up as you go. All while trying not to lose your commissary, because you want to have your Granny Goose potato chips, without which life here would be impossible.
Yeah, what are the average lengths of sentences for the people in the pod, your other 89 pod mates?
It's a good question. Some people are here awaiting trial. They'll be out before I will. Others have been here for 4 months, and who knows when they're going to get tried. Others are here for a couple of years. I think Frank, who seems like a character in Goodfellas. Did you ever see Goodfellas, the movie? I don't know if you ever saw it.
Yeah, I did.
Sounds like an Italian mobster, and he's got these exactly the same. He seems like Frank Osiello. Have you ever seen that actor? He has the same kind of bearing.
Hey, Frank. Say hello to Becky.
Really? Hello, Becky.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
Fine. And like if everyone is listening to me knows that I'm an inmate.
Yeah, tell us your Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, you're an inmate. Inmate Frank.
Yeah, inmate Frank.
So Frank, what are you in for?
Well, I'm doing two things here. I'm here on a parole violation. And I'm also in here on a fraud. It's a misdemeanor, nothing serious. I'm not here for no mass murders or no rapes.
No violent crime.
No violent crime.
No. Yeah, and so you've met Robert now?
Yes, I met Robert, the famous,
You know what he's in for?
Yes, I do know. As a matter of fact, I read his story in the Chronicle, and I seen his picture, too, sitting out front.
So what do you think about him being in jail for, giving bagels away to people?
Well, I've been in the system now for a very long time, and I know there's a lot of wrong things about the system. And I just don't think giving away food is one of the things that is wrong, you know? And, when you fight against the system, man, such as this, as you can see, you can't even give food away. And that becomes a crime.
Kind of a lot of things are becoming illegal. And there's some pretty harsh sentences associated with those illegalities, wouldn't you say?
Well, sure, but, you know, the time that Robert got, you know, it's kind of like a wake-up call, I would think, for him and the people that are backing him, because that's only a minor step to what they're going to do in the future. You know, because it's time for change, and come change, a lot of people are going to get hurt. You know, and the system is changing. And it's getting tough, it's getting tight. And it just goes to show you, you know, that it's serious, you know? And Robert's a good man. I've got to know him, and he's a good man. I'm even a good man. See, but my story's different from Robert's. I'm not giving away food, you know? But,
So when you get out, you gonna join Food Not Bombs?
Well, I may be in his super high when I get out.
We're always recruiting.
Yeah, Ron. I've always had leadership in me, too. You know, I've always been known to do a few good things in my lifetime.
So, Frank, we've also got this other little thing down here. It's called a sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz.
A sleeping ban?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Legal sleep.
Right. Where they try to, fight you for sleeping on a bench or on the beach?
Anywhere.
Anywhere. And this is Santa Cruz, huh?
Yeah.
This is
anywhere.
Santa Cruz boardwalk that they always, you see on commercials. And,
right?
Come one, come all, and, But then there's some signs saying, you can't sleep on the beach, and you can't pass out any food to anyone that is hungry.
You know what the ticket is?
What's the ticket?
$162 if you fall asleep.
$162. So therefore, I couldn't even go to Santa Cruz Boardwalk or the county and take a nap.
Well, you can. But you have to wake up at 11 o'clock at night and stay awake from then on.
If I was homeless and hungry and tired, I would have to keep myself up from 11 at night until 5 in the morning and try to get some shut-eye from 5 in the morning to what the day to 11 at night.
Right.
Get a meal.
Yeah, it's the law.
Man.
Yeah.
That's a question. You say this is live on the radio, right?
We're taping right now, and we'll probably be playing this on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Robert has a radio show called Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides.
Yeah.
And you're on it. Yeah.
So,
you're actually our first guest from jail. Since Robert
San Francisco
in.
County Jail number 8.
Yeah.
It's a new facility. It's 100 and I think it cost the business place. I'm not sure. The secondhand information. $130 million, I think. Right?
$130 million to build the jail that you're in?
Yeah,
I wonder how big a school we could build with $130 million.
School? How many lives can we say?
I wonder how big a library we could build with $130 million.
I would think quite a few families could live very comfortably with that kind of money.
Are you homeless, Frank?
Yeah,
go home, where do you go to?
Well, now I go to San Bruno. I have a wife, and she's a wonderful person, and I have a daughter.
How long has it been since you've been with your wife?
Well, see, I'm not an easy person to,
I mean, how many days, weeks, months, you know, how long has it been since you've been with your wife?
January 3rd. 6 months and some odd days. Yeah. Yeah.
Frank, what I'm finding out is that when a person goes to jail, that their family and their friends and their loved ones also are punished. They're, you know, they're deprived of that person. They miss them. They don't have that support. They're not there earning a living. The whole family is also punished. And you know, they're certainly innocent victims.
Well, you have to understand something, that a man such as me, who chooses to do this kind of, live this kind of lifestyle, knows the choice that he's making, that his loved ones are also going to be hurt. And, this is not new to me. I've been doing this since 73. So, being your first, guest speaker, you know, I've been married 3 times. Previous marriages, yes, they still go through the pain and the hurt of their father not being around, of their father not even being able to be a dad or a father, you know? And for me to go through this for so many years, I have gone hard in this area, because for me to fail in these conditions, you know, is not a very good thing to do. For just such as me, I got to deal with myself for years. But, and I can relate.
Okay? Yeah.
I'm sure that such as my children and my previous wives.
Frank, really nice talking to you.
Okay.
Let me talk to Robert again.
Okay, right.
Thank you, Frank.
Robert. Okay.
That was Frank.
That was Frank.
Do you have a last name? Does he want his last name?
Chavez.
Frank Chavez at F Pod.
Yeah.
So bathrobes Pierre. Uh-huh.
I don't have much time. The guards, what we were doing was technically illegal, but they didn't pick up on us.
Yeah, that's what I figured, that you were about to be rushed off to some emergency sleeping.
Right, it's an emergency sleeping. I wanted to give you a taste of it. I'm going to do interviews with people through Richard Edmondson, because it costs only 20 cents. It's much cheaper. And he can send you the tapes, you know, but it just makes more sense.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that will work just as well, too. And
we have about 5 or 10 minutes left. Unless I get cut off. So
have you gotten your top ramen from the commissary?
The commissary has indeed provided me with several things of top ramen, several of which I passed on to my chum, Tim.
So how much does the top ramen cost?
I think the top ramen ought to cost 72 cents or $1.50. I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
It's not called top ramen. It's called instant lunch.
Sounds so appetizing.
That's pretty exciting, I'll tell you.
Do they have such a thing? They have vegetables in there?
You know, I haven't even opened one up. I've been eating Cheetos, apples, oranges, and Three Musketeers bars. That's part of my daily diet. Actually, not my daily diet. You cannot order the candy, so you have to be careful, at least by the rules. I'm not quite sure which of these rules they enforce and which they don't. You get to learn the hard way often, because if you do more than 3 minor rule infractions, that's a major rule infraction, which can result in an addition to your sentence. Minor rule infractions, they cut off your phone privileges for 5 days, or your commissary for 2 weeks or something, which is kind of nasty in here. At least it wouldn't be nice for me if that happened.
Uh-huh. or cut off your Sunday New York Times.
Actually, it's been proposed that I could try to subscribe to the New York Times, but again, I'm skeptical that any newspapers other than the occasional Chronicle and a month-old papers from the gay newspapers sometimes show up here, like the, what's it called, the Advocate, a couple of other things show up, which are good. The gay weeklies are pretty good, but they're usually a month old. And you don't get too much news unless you watch television, which I find it hard to do because you can't really hear the television. Right now there's a baseball game on, and I'm staring at it, but I would never be able to understand what they're talking about. It's some kind of news about baseball and such.
Yeah.
Luckily, I hate television anyway, so I have no problem with that.
It's all statistics.
Sorry?
Baseball. It's all statistics.
I guess.
Well, let me tell you the great thing about baseball.
What's that?
Baseball is a game where each person has some greatly different skills to play. Each position is very different, the kind of skills. And so the theory is that there's a position in baseball for every type of person to fill.
Sounds preposterous to me, but I suppose it may be, that's not how I understand baseball. You have to be able to hit a ball with a bat and throw a ball back and forth. That's pretty much the basic skill.
Yeah, but see, a shortstop's got to be there to catch those quick balls when they come over. And the guy behind the plate, he doesn't even move.
Except when he goes up to bat.
And then there are the guys in the outfield that have to run and run and run.
Becky, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. This is supposed to be a stuff about me, jail, and jail inmates. What's wrong with you?
You're objecting to too much recording, huh?
No,
isn't that what everybody accuses you of, running around with tape recorders all over the place?
At a cost of, I don't know how much a minute, is always a matter of some concern, because I think we know who's...
Well, the tape is no money at all, because if I don't want to keep it, I can record over it.
That's true.
But the phone call, that's where
you have
2 minutes comes.
Of tape if you want to do any taping of me, so choose your next questions wisely.
Okay, if some of our listeners out there wanted to take some action, either on your behalf or on the behalf of the City Hall Sleepers protest, what would be one of the most effective things they could do at this point in time?
Well, I suggest they set up a table on the mall with the Common Threads Coalition, which is looking for people to do that. The Common Threads Coalition number is 421-9250 in Santa Cruz. I'd also suggest they set up a table at the Homeless Community Resource Center out at Coral and Highway 1. Actually, it's River and Highway 1 on the Coral side street. And get in touch with homeless people out there, find out how they're being treated by police in terms of tickets, and start documenting that and inviting homeless people to tell them what they can do for them in terms of basic rights questions. I would suggest that they, of course, look in on the City Hall Sleepers protest. That's really the center of protest in Santa Cruz around basic issues like sleep and police brutality. And it requires showing up at City Hall and talking to the folks there and seeing what they need. And I would suggest helping feed the people at Food Not Bombs when they serve. Feed the people's phone number is 425-3333. Food Not Bombs number is 425-3345. They all need help. And there's going to be probably an increasing crackdown on feeding organizations downtown, particularly as the buildings go in.
There's been quite a lot of PR in the paper lately about the Downtown Management Association.
Oh, really?
They're all yay for the Downtown Management Association. They're so wonderful.
Downtown Business Association. Downtown Management Corporation is what runs the host. Downtown Management Association is sort of the group that that gets mandatory assessments and is actually considering. There's a secession movement, also a cessation movement, I guess, around that. And they're also, of course, being some of the big wigs want to end the farmers market or relocate or some horseshit of that sort. But my time is almost up when I, to sulfurous flames and endless boredom, must consign myself. So whatever you do, don't serve soup. My advice to all you eat. Stay away from bagels.
Hopefully, sleeping outside. You were to write me a letter, and I'm sure you will give the people.
So those little bamboo shoots under your fingernails are working, huh? You've come around to a new way of thinking.
Rutkin is right in all things.
Okay, bathrobes, Pierre. Take it easy there, and have fun organizing the prison guards to strike.
All right. My regards to all the City Hall sleepers, including Sandpaper Sandy and Pester Me Not Pat. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Good night, you sweetie.
Good night.
And that was Bathrobes Pierre himself, Robert Norris, with his update from County Jail 8. And as I promised, I'm going to give you that address once more where you can write to Robert Norris Kahn in prison. And his number is 1472209, and he's at CJ8-FPOD-41B, which is at 425 7th Street, San Francisco, California, 94103. So send him letters. He especially appreciates clippings from articles and I guess he doesn't have to worry about letter bombs with Ted behind bars. Maybe can run into him and interview him a little later on in the weeks to come. So this is 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz, where First Amendment still works.
90s now.
Can't forget that Motor City.
Forget you, boy.
All the way down in L.A., California.
Way down in L.A., California.
Not to mention half-life Nova Scotia.
Doesn't mention it, please.
Or Lombard. You do the Lebedev.
Who?
Dream, you know.
Yes, I know.
Manchester?
No, Emlish. Emlish.
Alexandria?
Hey, Virginia, Virginia.
Falls Church?
Where's that?
This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, and on 96.3 FM, Free Radio, Santa Cruz. And that was the Mamas and the Papas, with a little bit dancing in the street. And now that summer is officially here, a summer in the city, and I can't think of any more fun summer activity then going down to City Hall and lying down on the bricks there and looking at the stars. Beautiful, beautiful time of year, and some of the most pleasant accommodations for civil rights workers exist at the Imperial Gardens surrounding City Hall here in Santa Cruz, where 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week protest is occurring. By the City Hall sleepers who are attempting to petition the Santa Cruz City Council to change portions of the camping ban law. The protesters are urging City Council to modify the ordinance so that the sleeping ban is no longer illegal. We just discovered that over in Palo Alto, they have a sleeping ban law, too, but it's 180 degrees from ours. There, you're not allowed to sleep between 7 in the morning and 10 o'clock at night. But from 10 o'clock at night to 7 in the morning, there is no law against sleeping. Sleeping at night? What a concept. But our city council has not shown itself to be very much in the mood to trifle with their laws. Maybe we'll have more luck with the covering up with blankets portion. This is under the Section B of the camping ban law, which makes it illegal for a person to cover up with blankets or bedding between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. The City Hall sleepers protest are urging the City Council to drop that portion completely. It is so inhumane to not allow people to protect themselves from the cold or the elements. And indeed, we have heard many reports, contradicted, I might add, by Mayor Mike Rotkin and Steve Belcher, that blankets and bedding are yet still being seized. There had been a slight cessation in the seizures of blankets after we had petitioned City Council members Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, and there was a period of time where no blankets were being seized. But since the injunction has gone into effect, an injunction that I believe was brought about for erroneous reasons, an injunction against the City Hall sleepers protest. And even Judge Stevens said in his courtroom in his hearing on Wednesday, June 19th, that he felt indeed that the city was attempting to end the protest and they had not obtained the injunction for some sort of health and safety hazard, as I believe they indeed needed to do. Except this is Santa Cruz County. We do what we want here, apparently. So those are some of the latest sharings about what's going on at City Hall. And as you know, if you've heard me speak before, I am in favor of changes in public policy so that homeless people are not vilified and homeless people are not criminalized and homeless people do not wind up going to jail simply to get a roof over their head and food to eat and a place to sleep. 96.3 FM. And that was Rick James with Sweet and Sexy Thing. Rick James, who is a bunk mate somewhere in the system with Robert Morse Kahn. So you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, 96.3 FM on your radio dial. This is Becky Johnson, your guest hostess, and no, I'm not wearing a bathrobe, but I didn't know the dress code was that strict when I signed on. And that was Paul Simon, and Why Don't You Write Me a Letter? And just to remind you that Bathrobes Pierre himself would dearly appreciate your letter, and is has a pretty good record of writing back. So send those letters and correspondences to Robert Norse Kahn, K-A-H-N, number 1472209, and he's in County Jail 8 in F-Pod 41B at 425 7th Street, San Francisco, California, 94103. So give him a card. Also, if you want to leave some messages for Robert, he suggested that people call and leave a message on the Food Not Bombs San Francisco hotline. And just call area code 415-386-9209. And you can hear some updates on that hotline and press the star key and leave a message yourself. Robert is able to access that twice a day. He gets messages off of there. And so it might be the most direct way to communicate with Robert. It's a 24-hour number. You can call anytime and leave messages for Food Not Bombs San Francisco and for Robert Norse Kahn. Also, and for those of you who are keeping track of how our dollars are being spent, especially regarding homeless funding, there's a social services subcommittee meeting taking place tomorrow, which is Tuesday, at the city manager's office at City Hall. It's at 8:15 in the morning, and at these social services subcommittee meetings will be discussed funding, additional funding for Community House. This is the project that has taken over from the site where the former Coral Street Open Air Shelter was, and it's a transitional housing for homeless people, although as you probably heard on this show, there's been a lot of criticism that this is really a program for people who are in SSI and disability that it's a rather expensive program and doesn't serve very many people are two of the criticisms that have been leveled against this program. But anyway, if you want to, these meetings are open to the public and they do invite public comment, and if you're at all interested, please come down. We'll be meeting with probably three city council members. I believe there's Scott Kennedy, Mayor Rotkin, and Jane Yokoyama. I could be wrong about that, but that's happening Tuesday morning. Also, you should be aware that coming up this November are city council elections, and a few seats are up for grabs or for re-election. And I just recently learned that David Minton Silva has announced his candidacy. He's running for city council. And one of the platforms that David will be running on is ending the sleeping ban. I've known David for a long time. He's been very involved in a lot of activism locally. He's a very personable person, and donates a lot of his time and energy and effort to a lot of good causes. I heartily endorse David Minton Silva's candidacy for city council, and I hope that when you get to meet him out in the community while he's campaigning, that you get to know him and get to see what a fine choice he would be for city council. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the case of Timothy Riotutar. This is a man who is up for on the three strikes law. It would have been his third strike. His crime was falling asleep with a loaded gun. I think he was in a hammock. And while this normally wouldn't have been a crime, nor much less a felony, he was on parole at the time. And so people who are on parole have an entirely different standard at which they need to uphold. And this being his third strike, he was slated to go to jail for 25 years to life. Now, I'm wondering how you feel about this. I wish Free Radio Santa Cruz had its phone line back. We do not yet, but plans are being made for that to be set up more permanently, if all goes well.
And hello, Bathrobes Pierre.
Good morning, Free America, or are you Free America?
So how did the night go?
Oh, well, we had a restless night in the lower bunk in 41B, but we came through it unscathed.
A lot of howling in the night from the inmates?
No howling, some snoring, bit of farting, you know, the usual mundane stuff. Unworthy of a great amount of discussion, but another night in Pod F. I was going to suggest to listeners that they might be interested in some folks have written me letters in jail, for which I'm very grateful. feel free to give out my address for more letters. But perhaps even more important than writing to me is writing to the newspapers. And we're talking the Sentinel, the Examiner, San Francisco Examiner, San Francisco Chronicle, who've all done stories on this case and so might be more likely to print material about food not bombs and the injustice of someone being jailed for serving free food than they were previously. In the past, it's been real hard to get letters in the papers about this issue, at least letters in the San Francisco papers, but now it might be easier. So go out there and write.
Letter writing, the letters section of the newspaper is often some of the best read section of a newspaper, and so letters can be very effective.
Definitely.
Yeah, and of course our local papers here too.
Yeah, the Metro, the Capitola Courier, the Mid-County Post, when it's going, the City on a Hill, the Fish Wrap Live, even the Redwood Review, which is a conservative newspaper on campus.
And the Valley Press?
Valley Press, Scotts Valley.
Scotts Valley Banners and Valley. I think they're the same thing, aren't they?
Could be. I've actually read it so rarely, I'm never quite clear which is which up there. Yeah, you know, and talk show. I understand, I heard from one supporter that John Sandich on KSCO was devoting some time to discussing my case and having call-ins, and even got a call-in from conspiracy buff, what the heck is his name, the fellow who believes that John Lennon was killed by Stephen King.
Oh, it's that...